If you use the internet on a daily basis, and chances are you do, you probably don't put much thought into cybersecurity. You know, your network connections, the pages you visit, the files you download. You should be thinking about these all the time. Welcome to And Security for All. Your host is Kim Hakem. We're here to help you understand, in general terms, how and why your cybersecurity should be kept in check. Now, here is Kim Hakem.
Hello, everyone. Happy Friday. Welcome to another episode of And Security for All. I'm Kim Hakem, your host. I'm very excited to be here today. Thank you to all of our attendees in Des Moines who came out yesterday. We had a packed house at our Des Moines cyber event. Thanks to my team for running that show. But it's always fun to be in the Midwest and see how packed we get our events out there. So it was a great event. We have some, we're going to be all over the country again in the next month, where we go to Columbus, San Diego, Phoenix, which my guest on the show today, he's from Phoenix. For all of you that would happen to not know what I'm talking about, FutureCon events, we put on cybersecurity events all over North America. They all run in a hybrid virtual mode. So if we're not in your area, you can always check us out virtually. We have great speakers and we'd love you to attend. So just check out FutureConEvents.com, or you can go to my LinkedIn and DM me about a show pass. So anyway, we have a great guest today. Today I have Michael Manrod. He presently serves as the Chief Information Security Officer for Grand Canyon Education. He has spoken at our events in the past. He's been on the show before. He is just a great leader of the industry. He's responsible for leading the security team and formulating that vision and enterprise of protecting students, staff, and the information assets across Grand Canyon. So today we are actually have a great show. We're going to talk about redefining security strategies, bypass IT, and return to the basics. So welcome to the show, Mike.
Thank you so much, Kim, for having me. I'm so glad to be here again and great to see you today.
Yeah, it's great to see you too. You know, before we jump into our topic, I know we talked about this in the past, but let's talk about you for a little bit and your role as the CISO. And you're, you know, one of the younger CISOs that I talked to. So tell us a little bit about your career path and how you got to where you are now, because you are such a role model for all your peers out in Arizona and all over the country.
Well, thanks, Kim. It's a fun journey. I actually, the way I ended up with this exact job is I referred a friend for the job, and we're actually still friends, and ended up chatting with it and ended up landing here kind of by accident. I was a security engineer for Check Point at the time, and this opportunity was one I sort of stumbled into in terms of this exact job. It's weird to think of myself as young because I've been in this job now for, you know, various permutations of this same role for about 7.5 years. And we've all seen the Yoda meme that circulated all over, where it shows like Grogu or Baby Yoda and shows like 1 year in IT security or cybersecurity. And then it shows, you know, old Yoda while he was training Luke after, you know, 3 years in cybersecurity. So it feels like a lot longer that I've been in this job, but I love it. It's been a fun journey. The story of how it started out is kind of funny. You want me to go into that a bit?
Yeah, I'd love to hear that.
Okay. So I was working as in a project management role, basically. And I was in the last bit of grad school. I did something goofy and signed up for a 3-year grad school, which was fun. I wasn't in a hurry. But the last year was mostly focused on security. And I was hanging out with my buddy, Andrew Wilson, who's a great security leader who I admire and look up to still. We were out for drinks and snacks after martial arts practice. And with Andrew, I was like, hey, dude, you know, the last year of my degree, why don't you let me like interview you and I can cite you as a source and I'll be like way ahead of the game. And he said, I'll do one better. I'm presenting at DEF CON. I get a free plus one pass. There's an extra queen bed. As long as you drive out and, you know, pay for any meals that like vendors don't pick up, you can just come out for free with me at DEF CON and learn about it yourself. And I don't even remember what year that was, but I instantly fell in love with it and it redefined my career path. You know, worked as a security PM for a bit, as an analyst, a couple places, and then later as an engineer in this role.
Well, that's pretty awesome. What a great place to start your career, like DEF CON. I mean, that's just nothing better than that. I haven't been to DEF CON, but I know all about it. And I always am an RSA person, but we're really the security practitioners that I need to meet and have speak at our events are at DEF CON. So I need to make it out there maybe next year. It just happens to be in August, and I feel like August is such a big vacation month. But a lot more people, I feel like a lot more industry leaders are going to DEF CON than RSA lately. Would you say that?
Yeah, I feel like I get different types of value out of RSA and Black Hat versus DEF CON. I actually like both. Yeah, but the cutting edge emerging trends of new problems, new opportunities, new things we need to think about, in my opinion, I find those at DEF CON. And then ironically, it's Black Hat and RSA where I go and get updates and talk to vendors on solutions and how to solve the problems we learned about at DEF CON.
Yeah, I don't know how long it's going to take. I think RSA is under a pretty big contract with that convention center, and people are kind of getting put off. Unfortunately, San Francisco is just not the safest place and expensive. Yeah, so Vegas would be a way better option. So going to have to rethink that. But it's just so fun, RSA, when you've been going forever and you just see so many people, and It's kind of our vacation because we're not working and we're not running a conference. We're just going out, going to all the fun sponsor parties. So those are always fun. But so let's get into, I've had like this eye infection and I've had like this upper respiratory cold. So if I'm a little off my game, I'll let you take it from there. But let's talk about redefining security strategy and returning back to the basics. And bypass IT. Give us a scenario of what that means in your mind and what we're going to talk about.
Yeah, absolutely. And I can maybe tell the story of this journey if you'd like that.
Yeah, that'd be great.
So there's a group that some of us have co-founded out in Arizona, and maybe it'll spread to other places, called the Threat Intelligence Support Unit, or TISU. And it's a free training that's about 15 weeks long. And then we have a community that meets once a month and works on things, tracks adversaries, threats. Well, one of our members, Ezra Woods, a good friend now and one of our TISU alum at the time, also run within the circle of ACTRA, or the Arizona Cyber Threat Response Alliance as well. He took a malware sample and reversed it about a year ago, analyzed it and realized that Dartgate malware was using this tool that we actually don't know how to properly pronounce. We don't know whether to call it AutoIt or AutoIT, but AutoIt rolls off the tongue, so we've been calling it AutoIt. If that's wrong, somebody can put it in the comments. But what we realized as we began to analyze this further is that AutoIt was very evasive, and the threat actors were using it. We figured out other threat actors were also using it and had been for some time. It's basically an automation tool, the very old automation tool that allows you to automate basic tasks. And it looks like the kind of thing when I first got into IT, the kind of tool back in the early days I could have seen myself using, to productively just get things done. The problem is AutoIt, and there's similar ones, they have similar problems like AutoHotkey, has a valid certificate, so it's tends to be viewed as a trusted, legit program, but it's really an interpreter for its own scripting language that lets you, it has like all the Windows API imports, or many, many, many of them, and you can write pretty much anything you can think of in it with some limitations, and it tends to be pretty evasive. So here at DEF CON Demo Labs this past DEF CON, Ezra and I, along with our friends Cameron, Jim, Colston, and I'm sure I'm forgetting somebody. I could go out to the GitHub project. Several of our friends collaborated on this framework called Bypass It. And what it is it's just a framework to test some basic things like getting a reverse shell, dropping a malware payload, blinding or disabling your antivirus product or your EDR or endpoint detection and response. People may not always know what EDR is. For those listening on the radio, basically CrowdStrike, that became famous or infamous recently, is one of the world's leading EDRs. And we all rely on these tools to find bad things happening on a system. Well, malware or malicious exploits coded in AutoIt and AutoHotkey tend to get around these tools more readily than they should, especially if you put some tinkering into it. So long story short, we built a framework and we can, you know, I shared the link to the GitHub project online, easy enough to find, but really that got us thinking, like, what do we need to rethink about our strategy if one of the tools we rely on the most, you know, whatever vendor, like we've tested many different vendors, you know, and they're getting better. We're opening tickets, we're trying to communicate, but if the tools we rely on the host can be easily blinded by different techniques out there, you know, we still need to keep using those tools. They're important, but what else do we need to do differently has been something we've been thinking about.
So what is it more like, what security team would be using tools like this? Is it more of like the pen testers and the SOC teams, or, you know, that I think that's confusing to a lot of different people because there's so many different, you know, titles and different people doing different roles in cybersecurity. Who would be using some of these kind of tools?
Yeah, so the tools are useful. I encourage everybody to use it and improve on it. Like what we said at DEF CON Demo Labs is we're not developers. Christian and Cameron and the other folks that worked on this and Ezra, we're not, like, we're blue teamers mostly. We're not really developers per se. Cyrus is, but long story short, of the group of us on the project, it's primitive, and the scary part is it still works. So I encourage everybody to get there, use it, test it on your antivirus products, open tickets with them about what works on it to get them to fix it so that the adversaries lose this leg up. So long story short, just to bring it all together, who should use this as part of their day-to-day job? I think it might be useful for penetration testers to use it and to improve it. You know, if somebody who does red team tools for a living takes a pass through it, they'll make the project much better because we're blue team hobbyists. But then the other side is we tried to make it easy to follow with a wiki supporting it so that anybody can go in, test it with your current tools, see what you detect, what you don't, and what you don't detect or what it doesn't stop, open tickets with your vendors to help close this tool or this loophole. My goal for this project is to retire it because hopefully in another year it doesn't work anymore.
So explain to us the difference between a blue team and a red team.
Yeah, that's a great question. So I'll add a layer to that as well with purple. We love colors. You know, I got the purple wall behind me. We love purple or colors in cybersecurity. So a blue team generally denotes the defenders. That's people like us who work at a company and it's our primary job to protect that company. And that divides into different kinds of work. Some people are on the engineering and tool side and deploy solutions like antivirus, firewalls, and so on. Some people are on the response side, right? Like they detect threats and design ways to detect threats, and then they block, respond, deal with, and even do some forensics sometimes after the fact. So that's kind of the blue team side. The red team side are people who pretty much, the way I like to think of it, are professionals, ethical hackers, good people, people on the good side of it, but that really think and act and use the same tooling and approaches as adversaries to help test companies, government entities, organizations to find their flaws and fix them before it leads to a very bad day. And of course, purple is this interdisciplinary science of defenders who try to get, you know, more red team knowledge or red team people who become defenders and bring that knowledge over, because the better we understand about attacks, the better we can defend.
So, you know, we have at our events, you know, we have all kinds of different titles that come to our events. We have all kinds of different size companies, from Fortune 100 companies all the way up to, you know, Fortune 1000 companies. So some of those smaller companies, they're not going to have, obviously, the budget to have a red team, a blue team, a purple team. So what are those type of companies doing when you maybe only have three or four people on your security team, if they're lucky to have that many people?
So I'm glad you asked that. It's a really, really difficult situation. And first, I'll give a shout out to Accidental CISO and the Mindful Business podcast. I might have gotten the wrong name wrong, but his podcast, which is focused on that audience. But really, it's a challenging problem. But I think the key is to start with the basics. And we'll touch on a few of those things in the moment. But if you're in a small shop, I think the key is not to get overwhelmed by trying to do everything, but begin to understand what the most essential things are, what you're trying to protect the best, and design a plan and then take steps to that plan. And even if you don't get there right away, if you just improve one thing every few months, even if you're a small shop, over the years, those improvements will accumulate. And who knows, the change you make in September or October may happen to be the one that stops the attack you receive in November. Success is never assured, but we can staircase our way towards success. I'll put a plug and we can circle back to it, but there's a project in its infancy that I'm also with some other friends trying to launch to actually help better equip those smaller shops as well.
So what are some of the, I mean, what would your advice be, though, to some of the smaller shops and, you know, getting ahead of being able to just detect the viruses or bad actors or some of the emerging threats that might be out there? What's your advice to them with a company that just doesn't even have much of a budget because they don't have the executive team on board to pay for that budget because it hasn't happened to them yet?
So I think the first thing to do is to categorize your risk, right? Like most attacks either come in directed at people or directed not at people is the way I like to put it really simply. So attacks on people, you want to make sure if you use an email platform like O365 or Google, go in and lock down the settings those tools already have, right? Like make sure you've got antivirus and phishing protections turned on. If you can get a small business email gateway or something like that to protect email coming in, you know, bad email, that's obviously huge. Make sure if you can do a good quality antivirus or EDR, the benefit of small businesses is they also often have small seat counts, right? So whereas a big enterprise may have to buy thousands or tens or hundreds of thousands of licenses for something, if you have to only buy 100 copies of an antivirus, it's not quite as formidable. But even if you just turn on tools like Defender and watch some YouTube videos on how to lock down hosts, and if there's demand for it, I'll put out some videos with more of those basics. But then on the system side, you know, Cloudflare and a lot of like, there's a lot of web products that give a free tier. So look at what options are free or available with what you already have. And then lastly, just make sure software is getting updated. Like if you just go around to each workstation and set things to auto update, if you don't have a mature patching process, that's going to go a long way. And then just multi-factor everything you can, right?
So you kind of told us a little bit of what inspired Bypass IT. So let's talk about that a little bit more and how does it differ from some of the other testing frameworks out there? And what are the other testing frameworks that are out there?
So there's a ton of great testing frameworks out there that are much, much more robust than what we threw together for this to illustrate this one use case. Like obviously Metasploit, for like host compromise, Core Impact, and Cobalt Strike, and Brute Retell are really popular tools that are used actually by red teamers. But there's no rule that says we can't use the same tools as blue teamers to see where we're weak and how we do. Also, you know, there's a ton of scanners out there as well. There's a lot of good tools, and we could probably do a whole episode on just that. But what Bypass It is about, and a couple follow-on projects we're working on too, is just going and testing yourself to see, am I vulnerable? Like if somebody tries these techniques that with AutoIt, does my antivirus pick up if there's a backdoor, if they try to blind my antivirus by creating a host file to the loopback address, or basically like if somebody tries to use these tools to evade or blind our tools, will we detect it is the big research question. And our hope, we hope that answer changes more and more to yes over time because of this.
So are you using this at like Grand Canyon? And is this a licensed like soft? What exactly is it?
That's a great question. So I noticed that it was the link was posted. It's a free community open source project that anybody can contribute to or improve, right? It's just out on GitHub. Yes, we've used it. There's also a detection folder that is what we wrote because we tested it and we weren't happy with the results, meaning it worked. So Christian on our team wrote some, Christian Talon wrote some really great detection logic and put that also in the project that you could then implement in your environment using your existing antivirus or tools to hopefully detect this. So the way we used it is we ran it, it worked too well. Then we implemented some of the detection logic that we've also shared. And then we at least started seeing this activity.
Well, what were some of the, when you went to DEF CON and you took this out there, what was the feedback that you got? And what did you do with it out there? And like, did you guys have a booth or something? Tell us what was going on out at DEF CON.
Yeah, so mostly we hid in the hotel room through a lot of Black Hat and the first part of DEF CON, just trying to add new features to it, like everybody probably does when they're demoing something. But what we did is we gave a talk in DEF CON Demo Labs. You know, huge shout out to Demo Labs. I think it's my favorite part of DEF CON because everybody creates things and brings them and shares them. And we did a demo and we walked through, and like the reception was super cool because one of the other people who gave a fantastic talk, a researcher named Matt Handy, he actually fixed one of the things that wasn't working with this framework, branched it, and actually improved and added to our project. So I think the most fun part of getting out there at DEF CON was engagement from the community and other people being excited about testing this and contributing to it as well.
So how does this redefine security like a strategy, and how is, again, I'm not exactly understanding, how is it returning to the basics?
Yeah, so I think we've become lazy, and I'm pointing the finger at myself here. We've become lazy and over-reliant on some tools like EDR or endpoint detection and response, good quality machine learning, based like antivirus, which has now been around for a long time. It's good. It stops a lot, but it has blind spots. These products have blind spots, and adversaries are putting tremendous R&D into trying to find and build on these blind spots to get their malware to run so that they can ransom companies, so that they can deploy info stealers, so that they can do all these things we want to stop. So really what we need to do is we need to zoom back. And my friend Rich Owen, who many listening to this might know, he actually wrote, he goes by Johnny Appleseed of cyber. He wrote the 1990 NASA manual for security. And I had the privilege of flipping through this book he wrote, all those years ago, just the other day, last week or two back. And I looked at him like, darn, these are things that we still don't do as well as we should today. If we go back to the fundamentals of segmentation and micro segmentation, right? Like isolating things in the proper zone, making sure that things that don't really need to talk to each other can't. Putting application allow listing or file integrity monitoring so that we look if certain files change, if certain new applications go to be installed, like we block that if it's not on a trusted list. Getting just identity and access right, like privileged access management, managing our passwords, picking good passwords, making privileged passwords very strong and different from lower privileged passwords. You know, all the basics of just hardening a system or a server or a cloud workload against intrusion, and just patching and applying updates, you know, keeping our software up to date. If we can't completely rely on our endpoint products to protect us, and I mean, newsflash, we never really could completely rely upon them. But if we can't completely rely on them, we still need these products, but we also need to make sure we're going back to the very basic things and getting them right.
So how can, you know, that there's, you know, a big burnout in this industry. How can companies mix new tech with basic, you know, security practices for better protection and also not burn their teams out? Because that's a lot. I mean, this is a super technical talk. So, you know, do the security teams, how did they stay ahead of, you know, just staying up with new security without, and still trying to do their job and only working 8 hours a day, which I'm sure that doesn't happen for most security teams, but that's probably what they would like. But that's just, you know, what people should work, but security teams work way longer hours.
It's true. Like, it's definitely, if you're thinking of getting into security, it's usually not like a standard 9-to-5 job. It's cool, it's fun, and sometimes it's more flexible than other jobs, but it gets a bit crazy. I think one of the things that we need to keep in mind is we waste a lot of effort across any business, across anything, not just cybersecurity. We buy things that we don't implement. We sometimes, like, we're not always rational as human beings. Sometimes we buy something that we saw at RSA that looks cool, but maybe we haven't solved a more basic problem first. So I think the number one thing is to come together, you know, whether you have a security team of two or a security team of 200, bring together the core decision makers and cross-functional experts and really map through your risk. Use a framework like MITRE ATT&CK if you can, and walk through what are we trying to protect? What are the worst case scenarios we want to avoid for our particular business? And for a lot right now, it's ransomware, but depending on your org, it could be different things. And then what are the pathways, looking at a framework like MITRE and ATT&CK, that an attack would follow all the way to that bad day? And then look at our tools we have and say, all right, what do we have that can intercept that process before ransom note, before the bad thing happens? And then what else do we need to buy, and which things will be most decisive, and map out flows like, hey, here if bad comes in via email, here if it's an attack on a website, and begin to ratchet down the things that make the biggest impact, you know, the smallest possible change or lowest cost change that will make the biggest impact. If we prioritize well, and then build out those changes in order of risk priority over time so that your team is not burnt out trying to do everything immediately, right? Like, if we look at risk, we understand risk, and we make a plan, it's going to be better and less frantic than if we're just running around with our hair on fire, which I think we all do sometimes anyway.
Well, going over to our guests, we have a comment, Brad Seifert. He said, hey, Megan and Ken, thanks for the and Security for All podcasts. I do have to give a big shout out to Heather, too. Heather lines up all our guests, and she does a great job. So thank you, Heather, too. And Megan helps run the back end of things. So I have a great team. And Brad, thanks for listening. He had a question. Auto IT, per forum pronounced auto IT. He said, I suspect as in automate IT. I'm not sure what that means. I'm sure you probably do, Mike.
Yeah, I think he's correcting my pronunciation, and I think he's probably right, right? It's probably supposed to be, I probably should be saying auto IT, not auto it. So this will be a test over the next year to see if I can retrain myself, and if the other members of our team can too. We'll make an effort there. Good point.
Well, tell us what that is, auto IT and auto hotkey.
So I know considerably more about auto IT, so I'll start there. But it is a tool that is very old. It's been around for a long time and like decades, that allows you to automate a task. It can accept screen coordinates. It can interact with your operating system. And Auto IT is, you know, Windows focused, whereas Auto Hotkey can run on Linux too. But both of these are basically automation platforms that let you do all sorts of things. If you're like, hey, I want, you know, every day I make this report that I copy these things out of these five spreadsheets, paste them here and turn it to a PowerPoint and email it off, you can use tools like this or even just other scripting languages to automate that whole task. And in fact, a lot of people in IT, myself included, kind of got their start tinkering with things, trying to automate tasks that they thought were dumb and didn't want to do anymore. So that use case is very valid. The problem is these frameworks can open up considerable capabilities to attackers. And sometimes they seem to be trusted way too much. And some of these tools also don't do a lot of policing to try to stop people from doing bad things with them.
So what makes like some of these tools hard for security teams to detect, and why is it challenging to keep an eye on these tools?
Okay, so the unique thing here is because it's a valid software application, it has a certificate that's trusted. Also, Auto IT has the problem that it'll let you create a script to do a vast number of things, and it's very powerful, but that it makes those scripts very, very difficult to read or interpret. There's some great researchers, like a researcher with the handle OxToxin did a phenomenal job of writing some scripts to interpret it, and there's projects out there online. But on the whole, what we found, and it's already improving since DEF CON a lot, I need to do another round of testing. But what we found is because of the combination of it's really difficult to detect the things that are, especially if you run this script, like a lot of security products just seem to be trusting it. Like they'd log what happened, but they'd be like, oh, this is a trusted program making these changes. We're not going to block it or do anything.
What was the perception or the reaction from people at DEF CON? And do you have a lot of people in this? I guess I'm still trying to wrap my head around the bypass IT, like you guys are a group, and do you have people using this bypass IT now? Do you have companies using it?
I know I've worked with several companies out of band to help them test. Like lots of people have reached out and said, hey, can you check on one of our systems? And I'll like help them through it. Because it's community and open, there's probably people I don't know about who've used it, and that's the whole idea. That's great. I'm going to keep specific vendors anonymized here for obvious reasons, but there have been vendors that have reached out to me, have opened tickets, have interacted, and have already made changes to their products to improve detection. So hopefully we see a lot more of that.
So did they just go to that link that Heather posted? Is that what gives them more information about what you guys have created?
Yeah, that link will take you to the project. And it truly is a cross-functional project. We've had, you know, students and people from different organizations now who've helped with it. So Ezra Woods and I were the two who presented it. But we were presenting on behalf of a community of people who have worked on this, and we have an acknowledgement section on the README with everybody listed. But yeah, you can go out there and there's a wiki that kind of walks you through how to do the different tests. And you can just copy that down on one of your test systems. I mean, it is intended to be malicious. So don't do this if you're not on the security team or working with your security team. But yeah, if you're on the, you know, make sure you've got the proper permissions to do this, and you can download it and test it and set it up and see if it works. And see what it does.
So what are some of like the security teams when they go to DEF CON, what are they walking away with? Like, how's it improving their security structure? Because I mean, I think DEF CON is probably one of the most cutting edge conferences out there. So what kind of positive things do you see coming out of DEF CON?
Well, every year for our team, and we try to take a good sized group out every year, a mix of students and staff and try to meet up with people who used to be students or staff. And I think the insights, like especially as we talk and reflect at the end of DEF CON each year, insights are often very specific changes we need to make. That's the first category. Like I remember sitting in a talk a couple of years ago, and I wish I remembered the presenter or presentation name. I don't. But somebody had come up with like a very, very like sneaky loophole that would let you send a lot of spam or phishing that would be highly trusted. So we're literally on a text message during that talk a couple of years ago with one of our engineers who didn't go, who was making changes right there and then to protect our environment from the exact thing that was being presented. So it's very much a just-in-time self-defense, but it also alerts us to trends, right? Like I remember a good example is you walk around the DEF CON bookstore, you go to talks, you see trends. And for example, like right now we're talking about evasion of antivirus and EDR products. And when you walk away, you see as those things are hitting critical momentum or AI supplementing, you know, adversary activity or these types of trends, you go there and you really get a feel for what's cutting edge. And then you can walk away thinking about that and also thinking about what we need to change as defenders and what we need to take back home with us.
Matt Clark said that USENIXX, am I saying it right, is a great conference too. Hey, do you know what that conference is?
I've heard of it. I don't know a ton about it, but Matt's a great friend. Hi, Matt.
Yeah, thanks for listening, Matt. And you know, we put on conferences, and FutureCon's a great conference, and every conference is, you know, I try to, you know, be very amicable with the other conferences, like just don't have them on the same day as me in the same city. That happened, I think, last year in Phoenix. There was I think it was one of the conferences, and I actually saw them out at RSA, and I was like, seriously, you should look at my schedule. I post it well in advance, and it's frustrating for the locals like you when there's two conferences, you know, on the same day or the day before. And, you know, the security practitioners, you know, they love these conferences, the reputable ones that come to town. And it happened to us in Kansas City. We had Interop, I haven't seen an Interop conference in forever, and it was on the same exact day as our Kansas City event. You know, it affected both of us, you know, and people want to go listen to any speakers that are out there, and people need their educational credits. So for anybody that's listening that is running conferences, we should try to work together. So, but USENIXX, I suspect it's more like a DEF CON, probably more like a SANS is what I'm thinking, where it's more, you know, of your pen testers and your hackers and, you know, things like that. Your ethical hackers, I would assume.
I would assume, yeah. And Matt, feel free to add more clarity too if there's more resources you want to post on that. And heck, maybe we should submit to it next year together. We haven't presented together in too long, Matt.
Well, or you guys could come to FutureCon and present together. Because last year you talked about AI, and that was a great topic. I've been to 30 conferences since then, you know, so I can't specifically remember what you talked about, but you had a great talk. Do you recall what it was? I know it was on AI and people.
Yeah, it was a fun one, and AI has moved so fast it would be considered cliche if I presented the same thing today. But it was playing with, you know, after, you know, ChatGPT 3.5 and the newest versions of Claude and Anthropic Claude, and a lot of these were coming out. The talk was just about the capabilities it would provide adversaries and the fact that you could get these tools to make malware for you. So we demonstrated a series of malicious tools that the AI created for us and tested those and talked through the implications. It was a fun time. I always love FutureCon.
Yeah, when we were in Kansas City, we had the CISO for the state of Kansas, and he came in and he did a presentation on deepfakes. And those talks are really good too, because, you know, what were some of your favorite talks at DEF CON?
Yeah,
I know you were hiding out in your room, so you probably missed a lot of them.
Yeah, I did miss a lot this time because there were like a few things we were trying to tweak and get going. But I think one of my favorites was Matt's, Matt Handy, who I referenced earlier, did a phenomenal demo labs talk on basically a platform that he has built called the All Commander. And it allows you to simulate a ton of adversary activities to see how your environment will react to them. So like if you're like, oh, cool, I'm going to play with Bypass It, go check out the All Commander too and play with that as well, because where one will test the host side a bit, his will test scenarios more on the network side.
So how are you getting your students to aid to the progress and thinking of some of these programs? And how, you know, I don't know if you know Jonathan Kimmett. He used to be the CISO at the University of Tulsa, and he was great. He like had his students, he had them like 10 of them were on his SOC team, you know, and what great experience for those students. We even had a show where he sometimes guest hosts this show for me when I'm on the road, and he brought his students on, and it was a great show. So what are you doing? Is Grand Canyon University, is that more of a like virtual school, or do you actually have a physical location there?
Yeah, I should talk about GCU for a moment. So
yeah, you should, because not to interrupt you, but they're all over the country too. Because we get people. Yeah, I'd like to know about that, because we see students all over the country that are at Grand Canyon University.
Yeah. So first disambiguation I should have provided with my like at the beginning is I have two different jobs. I'm adjunct faculty teaching malware analysis for Grand Canyon University. And then an educational services provider, Grand Canyon Education, is my day job, right? So I work for both orgs. But Grand Canyon University and like teaching is what I'm most excited about these days. And yeah, we have we have students on ground and a campus out here in Phoenix, and then people who attend online, and then remote learning sites that where you know people are learning nursing and other things. So I'm really really enthusiastic about GCU and love teaching at GCU. But GCU and the Arizona Cyber Threat Response Alliance, ACTRA, have come together in a couple of years and created, over the last couple of years, and have created a joint program that we run together called the Threat Intelligence Support Unit Training and Community. So I think that's our biggest outreach to students that's open that anybody can do. It's free. It's in person. We will have a free online version eventually when we get all the open action items done to create it. But that community sort of sits as a supplement riding on top of our degree program, but reaching out to other communities besides just our student population.
Well, so how involved are you with your students? I mean, does Grand Canyon University, do they have a cybersecurity program?
Yeah, it's pretty much like my favorite aspect of my, you know, day-to-day life, right? Like GCU has multiple cyber degree programs as well as business programs with cyber emphasis. We've got a cyber center of excellence, a warfare range on campus that is really, really outstanding and fun. We host a lot of events. So yeah, cyber is definitely an area of focus. And while I'm very much within my niche of specifically the couple things I teach, I could certainly bring, it would be fun sometime to maybe bring students and or possibly, you know, one of our deans to speak more authoritatively on the program as a whole.
Yeah, I know that we have people that some of the around the country, I've had some of the marketing people from Grand Canyon University reach out to me to see if they could get a table at our event to promote their program. So is it more of your cybersecurity program? Is it a 4-year program, or do you have like different programs to, you know, enhance somebody that's already in the industry?
So I know there is a mixture of undergrad and graduate programs, but I'd be the wrong person to speak to them. I'd probably butcher it.
Just curious, you know, they never have the budget for it. I try to give them a good deal, but because always trying to promote, you know, helping, you know, education, but just.
Go ahead. Sorry.
I was just saying, it's just kind of something that's just, I've wanted to ask you forever because I hear, you know, they come through our website and just, you know, they ask about different cities of trying to promote their cybersecurity programs. So just kind of curious about Grand Canyon. So good job for everything that you're doing for the future of our cybersecurity practitioners. And are you seeing some of it? Do you get to actually see the progress of some of the students coming out of there? And do they become your peers later since you've been, what, you said you've been there 7 years?
Yeah. It's a lot of fun. That does happen, right? Like they grow up and they go out and they do great things and definitely I have peers all over the place that I knew as students and definitely many of them that have far surpassed me at multiple different disciplines within cyber.
That's a really great feeling. You know, I've been doing these events, not with just FutureCon, my old company, and it's been a long time, like 25 years, but there's, we don't really allow students to attend our events because it's not a student program, but we let them come in and volunteer. And if they're, you know, in school, it's a great thing. We let them go listen to the talks and go talk to the vendors. And we have seen so many students that have graduated and now they come back as attendees and it's, you know, it's just a really cool thing to see them. A, they have found jobs from just volunteering at our events. So we've seen that 3 or 4 times in the last 2 years. So we love to try to promote, you know, the growth of students. And we were just, I know this is a little off topic, but last week, you know, I had a guest and we were talking about the industry, how there's so many jobs out there, but there's so many people that can't find a job. So what's your thoughts on that? I mean, he actually was like, there should be like a match.com for, he said Bumble for, you know, people looking for a job and, you know, people that have jobs. Because you see all these posts on LinkedIn that people are hiring, but then you see all these people that can't find a job. So what are you seeing from, you know, that since you're on the education side and you're seeing people graduating, are you seeing them finding jobs?
Yeah. So the struggle's real, right? Like the answer is definitely, but it's never easy, right? And I have like a set of advice for students and a set of advice for, you know, employers. On the employer's side, you know, we're never going to fill positions if we post them with impossible sets of requirements, right? Like, you'll regularly see like junior security analysts, but they want 5 to 10 years experience in CISSP. And it's been like the butt of a lot of jokes and memes and things that circulate on social media that I know we've all seen. But like we have to create on-ramps. And I think people are doing a much, much better job now than 5 years ago, certainly. But internships, student workers, like bringing people in, outreach, and then give those people a chance, right? Like hire those people. I'm really happy to say like our team has grown a lot over the years, you know, and a whole lot of that is students, you know, former students, people who interned and worked their way up. And I feel like that's the best way. And then from the student side, I think the key is, you know, getting into any technical field, even if there's openings, it's going to be competitive, right? So be prepared for that, right? Start thinking ahead, do internships, compete in competitions and, you know, capture the flags. You know, go to events and network, volunteer, like Kim just talked about. You know, definitely get out there and, you know, prepare yourself all the way along the journey so that when you graduate, it's not the first time that you're thinking about that. So, but there really is a matchmaking problem of connecting, you know, incoming talent in the field with the work that needs to be done.
So that's good, great advice. And hopefully, you know, it helps someone out there. Again, we're always trying to help as many people as we can. And there's a lot of great CISOs that put, you know, they're doing shout outs of their team members if they've had downsizing and trying to help, you know, people get jobs. But going back over, since we probably have about 6 minutes left, going back over to Bypass IT, you know, so is it your goal to keep that an open forum, or would you try to, or is it your goal to turn that into something more private that could be sold?
Our goal for this is just to be a community project to raise awareness. Now, of course, and my hope is that it doesn't. My hope is that it doesn't have a shelf life long enough that anybody would sell it or buy it or do anything like that with it. My hope is that the root causes of these problems are fixed quickly. Of course, that doesn't mean we won't ever create something as a community project that one day maybe we'll have free, you know, paid versions. And we certainly encourage student entrepreneurship. I can't talk today. At the institution, right? So this project, though, our plan is just to make it available for free for people to improve, evolve, and use. And if you're a red teamer, you know, definitely there's some things you might find value in using right away there till these issues are fixed. But the goal one day is to archive this project.
So do you see other things come out of DEF CON that, you know, if they're doing, what'd you say, it's called like demo days or whatever they're doing there, do you see things that actually make it to market and all of a sudden you're seeing it sold?
Yeah, I think there are a lot of things that happens with, and a lot of products that we've seen over the years, like obviously Rapid7 started with the foundation of Metasploit and HD Moore and kind of that pathway. I think, like, personally, the model I like best to commercialize cyber ideas is to make it free, but then eventually if it grows to a size where you need a company around it and people doing things and ongoing support, there can always be free and premium versions, and that model has proven itself to work over and over again.
And Heather did put a little, your topic last year was, I tricked AI and I liked it. That was such a great, that was just such a great topic title as well. But we're down to about 3 minutes left. What would be some of your advice, you know, walking away that you could say to the security teams, what they could do, small steps to make a difference today?
Yeah, I think, like, if we really look at it, I would say, obviously, we need security products. We need tools. We need all these things. And build risk-based plans and roadmaps to leverage tools to solve problems. But also, in parallel to that, make sure we're getting the basics right. Make sure we're segmenting our environments. Make sure we're doing, like, the basics of host hardening, like you know, host firewalls, you know, application control, and you know, patching, and you know, definitely make sure we're getting on top of our identity and access game and multi-factoring everything we can. Really, like if we do these basic things, we're going to have a much better chance of success when somebody finds a way around, you know, the various tooling that we rely on as well.
And I guess, you know, would you say, I guess it's probably really hard for some of the security folks to say, you know, can you help me? I don't know. You know, what's your advice to them? Just because it probably is embarrassing when you're supposed to know something and you don't know it and it could affect your team.
My advice would be, realize that none of us know everything. I mean, there's all sorts of stuff I run across I don't know all the time. So don't be embarrassed, reach out, connect, ask for help, and definitely let's connect in communities so that we can all share information, improve, and get better together.
You know, I am the president of the local chapter of WSEES here, and I have a lot of women tell me that that's their big fear, you know, is just because there are women they're probably the only women on the cyber team. But anyway, we are, that's a whole nother topic. That's a whole nother discussion. Michael Manrod, who's the CISO over at Grand Canyon Education, our university. Thank you so much for being here. I'm going to see him out in Phoenix. We have our Phoenix Cybersecurity Conference. I think it's October 30th, and Michael's going to be sitting on the panel. So if you're in the Phoenix area, make sure you join. Thanks for being on the show again today. It went way too fast. Thank you all for tuning in. We will be back next week. I hope everybody has an amazing weekend. I hope it's beautiful wherever you are. Enjoy your family. Be safe, be secure, and we'll see you next week. Thanks, everyone.
Thank you for tuning into And Security for All. Be sure to join your host, Kim Hakim, for another episode of the show next Friday at noon Pacific time and 3 p.m. Eastern time on the Voice America Business Channel. And don't forget, you can follow Kim on LinkedIn by searching for Kim Hakim. That's Kim, H-A-K-I-M, to keep yourself posted on all of her upcoming cybersecurity events. Are you a cybersecurity professional that needs to earn continuing educational hours? FutureCon Events brings high-level cybersecurity training, discovering cutting-edge security approaches, managing risk in the ever-changing threat of the cybersecurity workforce. Cybersecurity is no longer just an IT problem. To learn more about attending a virtual event, go to futureconevents.com or email info@futureconevents.com. Or follow us on LinkedIn or Twitter at FutureConHQ. Don't miss the weekly FutureCon Seamless podcast series, focusing on the insights and thoughts of chief security officers and industry pioneers making a difference throughout the world. Kim Hakim, CEO of FutureCon Events, and Darren Anderson, CEO and co-founder Next Robotics, host Seamless Podcast, started by a team of entrepreneurs with experience in fields like smart cities, technology, cybersecurity. The result is a series of podcasts unlike anything you've ever heard anywhere. Listen where you get your podcasts, including Apple, Spotify, and Stitcher.